Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. On August 24th, the billionaire Russian founder of Telegram, Pavel Durov, was detained after his private plane landed a few miles north of Paris from Baku, Azerbaijan. Telegram is a messaging app and social network with almost a billion users around the globe. It has been used by activists in places like Hong Kong, Belarus, and Iran to organize and communicate safely. It's also used by neo-Nazis and violent groups who encourage followers to commit mass murder and assassinate politicians. Telegram played a key role in fomenting the anti-immigrant riots that recently swept across the United Kingdom, according to reports. French authorities indicted Telegram founder Pavel Durov for organized fraud, spreading child abuse images, drug trafficking, and failure to cooperate with law enforcement. Today's guest, reporter A.C. Thompson, writes that the platform Durov created has long been both applauded and derided for its extreme commitment to free speech and for rebuffing inquiries from both U.S. and foreign law enforcement agencies, which have sought to gather information about alleged criminal activity on the platform. A.C. Thompson is an investigative reporter with ProPublica and a correspondent for the PBS series Frontline. ProPublica and PBS Frontline have been investigating Telegram's role in a string of recent alleged far-right acts of sabotage and murder, and how the company's inaction allowed extremists to plan and even advertise their crimes. A.C. Thompson and his colleagues ProPublica's James Bandler and Frontline's Karina Meyer wrote the piece, The Accelerationists App, How Telegram Became the Center of Gravity for a New Breed of Domestic Terrorists. Hi, A.C. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you back. So this is the first time that the owner of a social media company has been arrested for what's published on its platform and refusing to cooperate with authorities. A.C., how significant is this?
I think it's a big, big deal. And I think it's been misunderstood by a lot of people who are not on Telegram frequently, who don't really understand what transpires there. And look, there's a ton of just average, casual, normal conversation that goes on there, particularly amongst people who do not live in this country, like WhatsApp. It's very popular outside of the US. But it's also a place where absolutely insane, horrible, horrible conduct happens that's unlike anything I've seen anywhere else in the social media space. And so what I mean by that is, like, for example, one of the cases that we looked at involved a guy who was in prison on firearms charges. He had a smuggled cell phone. He put Telegram on the cell phone and he ran a channel where he was selling allegedly illegal guns and gun parts to make guns fully automatic to white supremacists and other domestic extremists. When you go to that person's channel, people are advertising other channels where they are selling stolen stimulus checks and tax return checks. You know, the amount of criminal activity, in particular terrorist activity, that occurs there, that is not just people saying bad things, but is really operational, is just mind-blowing.
Well, the fact that you say you're seeing things on Telegram that you have not seen on other platforms says a lot, because you have spent many years spending time in these online forums where neo-Nazis and right-wing extremists organize and share their ideas. So can you tell us just a bit more? I've never been on Telegram. I'm sure a lot of our listeners haven't. Can you tell us a bit more just what it looks like and how it works?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for backing me up here and getting the foundation. Telegram is sort of a combination of different sort of apps in some ways. So it has a direct messaging feature that is, basically can be like sending text messages or SMS messages to your friends. But it also has the ability to create channels and private chat groups. So you and I could create an investigative reporting channel and advertise it to everybody on WhatsApp, and they could come join, and we could post articles and stories that we think are cool, and people could chime in and comment on them and share them. We could also create a private investigative reporters chat that would be completely and utterly unmoderated and uninspected by people at the company. So it has several different sort of features. And people do the things like we just said. They create cool channels like investigative reporting or legitimate activism channels or whatever. But they also use these features to do this. They can advertise their terrorist ideas, terrorist goals, and extremist goals in a public channel. They can direct people who are users of Telegram to that public channel. They can post things inciting people to engage in white supremacist terrorism in that channel, and people can chime in and chat. And then they can direct them to a completely private chat where the conversations get worse and more grim and more directed. And then they can also, you know, basically engage in direct messages with folks. So that's the kind of stuff that happens there.
And talking about monitoring this, it's very difficult. In your piece, you report that Axel Neff, who helped start Telegram, said the company's core team of about 60 employees, 30 of whom are engineers, is too small to monitor the platform for criminal conduct. He said, quote, "Think about the size of Telegram. There are about a billion users every month, a billion. Telegram is a massive community. They're not staffed. They don't have the capacity to monitor everything that goes on there." Neff said it would be professional suicide for Telegram, which has marketed itself as a bastion of unfettered speech, to make a serious effort to moderate content. He said, "I don't think it's something Durov will ever do." So tell us more about that.
Yeah, so the thing that they have really sold themselves on is, like, you can say whatever you want here. You can have any kind of conversation you want here, and we will not intervene. Now, they do have some basically contract moderators, some of whom are paid, some of whom are not paid, who can conceivably refer things to the company and say, hey, this is a problem. It should be taken down, or take things down themselves. They clearly do not have enough staff to meaningfully moderate a platform of this intense magnitude. And they don't have the appetite. They just really have not had the appetite. And, you know, Durov told, before he was arrested, he told Tucker Carlson, hey, you know, we just don't comply with subpoenas and search warrants and court orders from government agencies if we don't agree with them. And when your January 6th committee reached out to us, we blew them off. You know, that's what he said. When we talked to law enforcement over and over around the world in multiple jurisdictions, you know, around the world, they say, hey, we come to this company and we contact them saying, we're worried that a terrorist, a white supremacist terrorist, is using your platform. We need information on this user. And they ignore us. Today, Durov took a slightly different tack. And he said, you know, maybe we are going to adjust and maybe we will start. And he said, we will start moderating these private chats, which we have not done in the past. So we'll see if that happens. And if there is a real approach to moderating content on the platform, there really has not been, for the platform's existence so far, a real concerted effort to do that. So we'll see.
The New Yorker reports that Telegram's lax content moderation policies have helped make it a haven for users who might not otherwise be able to post freely, including dissidents, brokers of stolen personal data, child pornographers, American right-wing extremists, and members of the Islamic State. So again, what else can you tell us about these charges? They include drug trafficking, failure to cooperate with French law enforcement. What else have you found?
Yeah, I believe these are like complicity charges, like basically being complicit with those crimes. And I think like this was not shocking to me at all, because the platform, if you're going to basically reject law enforcement over and over again, and not comply with any kind of cooperate with investigations into things like identity theft, which is a huge thing on that platform, people selling stolen identities. Wow. If you're not going to cooperate with child pornography investigations, if you're not going to cooperate with drug investigations, if you're not going to cooperate with terrorism investigations, and that seems to be what has happened, then eventually you will end up in legal trouble. I just don't think it's super shocking. I think it's actually somewhat predictable.
This is so interesting and important, AC, because when this happened, I saw a lot of people on social media saying that this is censorship, that the government is going after this guy and this is complete censorship. But they're not talking about these real life consequences. You all report that law enforcement agencies on both sides of the Atlantic have interrupted a series of criminal schemes. There's so many here. In July, a Georgian man accused of leading an accelerationist terror group, and we'll talk about the accelerationist group, was arrested in Europe for allegedly soliciting people to carry out murders and bombings in the United States. That same month, federal prosecutors charged an accelerationist named Andrew Takistoff with plotting to destroy an energy facility in New Jersey. Manhattan prosecutors in June announced charges against Hayden Espinosa, accusing the Texas man of selling illegal guns and firearm components through a Telegram channel aimed at white supremacists and accelerationists. What would you say to people who do not trust law enforcement, period, and say that this is nothing more than censorship?
Right. And look, we always want to be careful and thoughtful about how we allow law enforcement to interact with publishing, and essentially social media is publishing, right? We want to be careful about allowing law enforcement to have access to user data on social media platforms. You know, those civil rights concerns are absolutely valid, and we have to do that balancing act as societies all the time. However, the things that happen on Telegram, a lot of these are not protected speech anywhere in the world. They're just not. You know, I can tell you absolutely with complete certainty that I have been in channels, I have looked at Telegram channels in which people plotted violent accelerationist white supremacist terror attacks. And an accelerationist is a white supremacist who wants to collapse society, bring down society, and start over with a white ethnostate. I have looked at these chats in which people plot terrorist attacks on Telegram and then carry them out and kill people. That's the kind of stuff that's happened that people are both, you know, researchers, academics, law enforcement are all concerned about.
How big is this group? Again, we're doing so many shows these days, AC, where people either say that could never happen in the U.S. or you've got to be embellishing, right? I mean, how big is this? For people who don't hang out in these channels and just don't really know how big this whole, do you call it a movement? And it seems to be a lot of young men. You started your piece with Alexander Leitner, a 26-year-old construction worker in Sarasota County, Florida. We'll talk about him in a minute. But first, how concerned should we really be about these people, and how big of a movement is this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, the accelerationists are a small subset of the far right, a small subset. We don't have good numbers on them. What people who track them say is that there have been about 300 crimes over the last 25 years or so that used accelerationist tactics or ideas were behind them, or people who identified as accelerationists were involved, like in the U.S., and that's basically felony level cases. So there have been a significant number of crimes. Not a, you know, again, it's a subset, a small subset of the far right, but a deadly and dangerous subset of the far right. And if we look back in recent years at the U.S., people who seem to subscribe to accelerationist ideology have killed more than 30 people in this country in mass shooting and terror attacks. And so that's things like the attack on the Walmart in El Paso, the attack on the Tops supermarket in Buffalo that killed 10 black shoppers in that place, and other attacks like that. So small group, but very deadly consequences.
Oh, that's devastating. So the person who shot up the Tops store in Buffalo was connected to these accelerationists?
The person who shot up in fact, it goes like this. The person who shot up the Tops store there seemed to subscribe to accelerationist ideology and was in a Telegram channel, allegedly, according to New York Police Department, with a white supremacist who was selling guns, the guy I was talking about earlier, who was selling guns and gun parts from his prison cell. Wow. So, yes, like we know he was on Telegram. We know he was in a bunch of bad channels. And we know that he seemed to subscribe to accelerationist tactics and ideology.
I think what's so tough about this, AC, is that it's one thing for these guys, again, mostly it seems like young white men, talking about these things, making threats for various reasons. Maybe they just need some attention. The problem is, in this country, it is so easy for these guys to get guns and carry this out. You might have hundreds of thousands of people talking about this, but if you only have a handful of people taking action, that can be, and we've seen, very deadly.
Yeah, exactly. And I think whether you're a journalist monitoring this, whether you're a far right or anti-fascist researcher, whether you're working for law enforcement and you're looking at these statements people are making, it's very hard to separate the signal from the noise, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people saying awful things, talking violently, talking about killing this traitor or that traitor, this enemy or that enemy. And so how do you separate the people who are just making posts and aren't actually going to take action from the people who are actually plotting to do something with the very easily accessible firearms that you can get in this country? I think it's very hard. And I'll tell you, the thing I would say, like, a thing that does worry me is you get into some of these channels and people are posting their arsenal. They're posting all their assault rifles, their knives, their pistols, all that stuff. And you think, there's a bunch of these people who are very heavily armed, and all you need is one of them to go out and do something horrible, as you said.
Wow. AC Thompson is an investigative reporter with ProPublica and a correspondent for the PBS series Frontline. We're talking about the piece he wrote with his colleagues called The Accelerationists App, How Telegram Became the Center of Gravity for a New Breed of Domestic Terrorists. To your point about what is taken seriously, I'm wondering what concerns you the most right now, given that you hang out in so many of these spaces and you monitor them. A couple days ago, we had David Nywert on the show, who wrote a book called The Age of Insurrection. And he said something that made me make a double take. He said he's concerned that after the election, if the election is really close, depending on what Trump does, saying that it was stolen, he's afraid that we're going to see a lot of violence right after the election, possibly geared toward people who have Kamala signs in their yards. And it made me say, what? So it's so hard, AC, to know, what are these people really going to do? What do you take seriously? So what concerns you the most at this time?
Wow, that's a tough question. I think that the thing that I always think about is a version of the question you just asked, which is that you don't have to be part of a large movement. You don't have to be super well organized. You don't have to be a criminal genius to do something awful in this country. Like, you have easy access to things to make explosives and easy access to firearms. So I think more that I'm worried about people being inspired to commit acts of terrorism directed at Jews, Muslims, immigrants, LGBTQ community members, people of color, and going out and sort of being, getting into an online community on Telegram or another social media platform, getting deep into these ideologies, and then going out and being largely undetectable to anyone before they go out and commit a mass shooting or another type of terror attack. And I think we're already in that age, and we just haven't realized that that's what's happening. The age of far-right leaderless resistance and these kind of acts that are carried out by people in the name of a movement, but who are not actually part of a group. They're individual actors inspired by their online community. And I think that's very hard to detect and hard to stop. And that worries me that we will continue to see more of that type of thing. In regards to the election, I am, like a lot of people, baffled about what might happen. I'm glad David has a theory. I don't have a theory. I'm confused by the chatter I see.
Well, and to talk about the relationship between Trump and Vance and these far-right groups, last week, The Guardian reported that a top J.D. Vance aide worked for far-right consultancy with extremist links. And so what are your thoughts, AC, about media coverage of these issues? I mean, to think that more than 1,265 people have been charged in nearly all 50 states and the District of Columbia for the January 6th attacks on the Capitol. And you just wonder, what are these guys doing now? Not all guys, but mostly. And then media coverage of all of this, major media. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have a thought. And it goes like this. It goes like this. I think that the media have begun to normalize, and that's a cliche, but I think we are normalizing extremist conduct and ideology. The former president of the United States engaged with people to violently stop the transition of power from one administration to the next. That's very clear. All these people engaged in basically an insurrection, in a violent action to disrupt the democratic process. And we now, you know, basically members of the Republican Party are okay with bringing Trump back. They have forgiven that. They don't say, you know, people don't say, this is a guy who tried to destroy democracy. They don't say the people involved that day were trying to destroy democracy. This has all been sort of memory hold and forgotten what happened that day. And, you know, I just think that as journalists covering it, you have to say the age of extremism goes to the top of the political, you know, ladder in this country. There is a huge number of people who, when you look at social science surveys, think that violence is an okay way to affect social change in this country. And there's a huge number of people that say, you know, Trump did nothing wrong that day. The people who stormed the Capitol did nothing wrong. And I think we as the media are not effectively understanding that we are living in an age where extremism has absolutely penetrated the mainstream.
What do you think explains that, given all that has happened?
I think that we as a society, to some extent, well, let me give you an example. The day after the insurrection, I was in the Capitol interviewing Republican and Democratic Congress members who were freaked out. They were so freaked out about what happened. And I had Republican Congress members telling me, this is Trump's fault. This is on Trump. He inspired these people. He encouraged these people. He wanted to disrupt our peaceful transition of power. And they were furious. And a few months later, they had forgiven him. They had buried it. They had decided they were going to line up and support him. And now they are endorsing him to be the next president. I mean, I think that's part of the problem, is that there has been this dramatic about face by members of Congress. And as the media, we're not saying, hey, look, you told us totally different things you know, on January 7th than you're saying now. And what you're, you know, you thinking that this is all okay is not okay.
And we've talked about this so many times, AC. In some cases, the reason why Republicans are not speaking out is because they're afraid for their families' lives. Mm. They're afraid of death threats. So many people have endured this, and they don't want to speak publicly, which speaks volumes.
Right, exactly. And actually, I was just thinking about that as people on the Republican side I interviewed on January 7th, that was one of the things they were saying. It's like, my family's been threatened. I've been threatened, you know. But, and that is like, that is another sign that we are living in this age of political violence and extremism that we are not dealing with, is that people don't want to get public service jobs, government jobs, whether it's at the county level or the federal level. People don't want to deal with this kind of harassment, abuse, and threats that they're getting. And we're, as journalists, I don't think we're dealing with it well. And as a society, I don't think we're confronting this sort of disintegration of civil society and culture.
AC, unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd love to have you back for a longer conversation, because I read an interesting piece yesterday about how Trump is doing all of these interviews with men who have very popular YouTube shows. And some of these interviews are getting like 15 million views. And we're not really talking about that. So I'd love to have you back, AC, to continue this and to talk about your really important reporting. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
AC Thompson is an investigative reporter with ProPublica and a correspondent for the PBS series Frontline. You can read the piece that he wrote with his colleagues, The Accelerationists App, How Telegram Became the Center of Gravity for a New Breed of Domestic Terrorists. Find it at kalw.org, click news, and then your call. Coming up after a break, we'll discuss media coverage of the presidential election and the Republican Party's extreme anti-abortion agenda. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.